Coming up on today's Locked On Dodgers, Jeff continues his conversation with Adam Dorowski of Baseball Reference, talking about Hall of Fame candidates. So that's what's on tap, so make sure to keep it Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yo, Dodger fans. Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends here, and this is Locked On Dodgers, the daily podcast covering the Dodgers, the smart fans' perspective on your boys in blue. I am solo for the moment. The majority, or actually probably all, most of this episode is going to be Jeff's continued conversation with Adam Dorowski of Baseball Reference. But this is the intro. We want to thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every morning. Remember that we can be found wherever you find podcasts and on YouTube by searching Locked On Dodgers. Some quick news before we get into it. The Dodgers did not have a Cy Young winner. It was announced that Corbin Burnes won the National League Cy Young. Max Scherzer finished in third place. Walker Buehler finished in fourth place. And Julio Diaz finished tied for seventh place. We're going to get into that on tomorrow's episode. We're going to talk about, you know, maybe why Scherzer fell a little bit, why Julio was a little bit lower than maybe even we thought, and was that the correct voting, or did we get a little bit of snubbed on the Dodgers side? So we're going to get into that tomorrow. Today's episode will be continued with Adam Dorowski of Baseball Reference, talking about Hall of Fame candidates and the jury and the selection committee and all that good stuff. So that's what's coming up on Locked On Dodgers, and here it is. BetOnline is back and better than ever, and they have a brand new interface on their website for the start of basketball season. They have more props, more odds, and more lines than ever before. More chances for you to go win some money at BetOnline. It remains your number one spot for all baseball and football action this season. Don't miss out. Football's halfway done. You still got time. Basketball is just underway. You still got time. But not only do they have basketball and football, they got NHL, boxing, UFC, whatever's going on in sports world. They got you covered all the way. Also, to your favorite Vegas casino games, you can find a myriad of ways to win money at BetOnline. So don't wait to take advantage of all those amazing offers for the 2021 season. And right now, you can get a 50% welcome bonus at BetOnline with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's promo code LOCKEDON at BetOnline for a 50% welcome bonus after your first deposit. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, we are back, and here is Jeff's continued conversation with Adam Dorowski of Baseball Reference.
Talking about the committees, let's talk a little bit just about how the committees work. How many people are on the committee? How many of the 10 guys on the ballot are they allowed to vote for? All that. Just kind of explain those rules for us.
Yeah, these committees are a huge math problem. So there are 10 candidates. There are 16 voters. Each voter can vote for four candidates. So that means for the 10 candidates, there are 64 votes to go around. So let's say that like Mignoso and Allen were unanimous. That's half the votes gone right there. So you need 12 or more to get in. And that's where it really becomes a math problem. There need to be either certain candidates who really stand out and collect all the votes, and that way they're able to get over 12. Or you run the risk of what happened last time where everybody just splits the vote and nobody gets in.
And this committee really is more like a committee, right? Like a jury. They're deliberating. It's not each go to your room and send in your vote. They're actually arguing for their people and having a conversation and then taking a vote at the end, right?
Correct. Yeah. So they could get in there and say, you know, we should really prioritize the living candidates here, and this is why, and this is who we should talk about. So they have the opportunity to have these types of discussions. I don't know what type of discussions they'll have. They might also get in there and say, look, we really dropped the ball on Allen and Mignoso, so we really should honor them now. I think the players or candidates in general that will not do as well are the ones that have been deceased for a while. So that would be Ken Boyer, that would be Gil Hodges, because there isn't that urge to make up for a wrong, and there isn't the urgency because they're still living.
Yeah, that makes sense. With Gil Hodges, it's like, okay, well, he's been dead for 50 years, so it's not going to hurt to wait and vote for him next time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And which is how you end up having him, you know, get passed from ballot to ballot, because, you know, he's not going to be dead for any less time next time they vote, you know? And so there's never going to be that urgency that there is for some of these living players. So like you said, until we either, sadly, there are no living players on the ballot, or some of those guys get elected, that urgency is never going to be there. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Dick Allen. I can tell you want to talk about Dick Allen. And I want to talk about Dick Allen too. Dick Allen only played one year with the Dodgers. He was very good. And then the next year he was on the White Sox and won the American League MVP award. Dick Allen could hit. He could hit and hit and hit. You know, just a great hitter. 156 career OPS plus. Relatively short career. You know, 15 years, only 7,300 plate appearances. But man, Dick Allen could hit.
Yeah, that OPS plus of 156. So takes his on-base percentage and slugging and compares it to the league average based on his park. 156. Now, among players with 7,000 plate appearances, that is 15th all time. I'm not saying that's 15th among non-Hall of Famers. That is 15th all time. That number alone is why Dick Allen is a Hall of Famer. Now, he had his career didn't last quite as long. He didn't reach the 60 WAR. He didn't reach the 2000 hits. He only had 351 home runs, but boy, could he hit. I wish that his career was a little bit longer, so he had all of those round numbers, but it was not. And that's what's taken so long. Not only that, but he had a reputation as a, how do I want to put this? He didn't have a great reputation for his personality, but I think a lot of people don't know what it was like to be a young Black player in Philadelphia and just didn't understand why he couldn't just conform and do what he's asked to do. But that's not the way that it works. And I think we need to understand that, especially given the state of the country, the fact that, you know, we're now looking at all of these candidates that weren't even allowed into the leagues if they were just born a little bit before Dick Allen. I think those are definitely things that we needed to take into consideration when considering Dick Allen's candidacy.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of drive home that point further about his OPS plus that you made, I just used this cool tool called StatHead that you might be familiar with. Used to be called the Baseball Reference Play Index, and now it's called StatHead, and it's awesome. Listeners, if you're not subscribed to StatHead, you should be, because while Adam was talking, I did a quick search so I could see. I was thinking, okay, if he's 15th all-time in OPS Plus among players with at least 7,000 plate appearances, I thought, well, who's behind him? And just if you just start immediately after him, it's ridiculous. The people immediately 16th through 21st on this list: Hankin, Willie Mays, Joe DiMaggio, Mel Ott, Manny Ramirez, Frank Robinson. Those are the guys who weren't as good a hitters as Dick Allen, you know, and obviously that's a shorthand there, who had lower OPS pluses than Dick Allen. Obviously some of those guys hit more home runs. They all had even Joe DiMaggio, who had a relatively short career, had more plate appearances than Dick Allen. And, you know, Hank Aaron had almost twice as many plate appearances as Dick Allen. And so I'm not saying that Dick Allen was more valuable or even a better player than those guys, but just on a per, you know, pound for pound, what he did, he was a great, great hitter. And you keep going down. Mike Schmidt, 148. Yeah, Willie Stargell and Willie McCovey, both 147. You know, David Ortiz and Chipper Jones, 141. Larry Walker right there too. Alex Rodriguez, 140. You know, that, like, these are guys who we think of as some of the best hitters in baseball history. And Dick Allen, in his short career, was every bit as good as some of these guys. You know, didn't do it exactly the same way as some of them, but he was a great, great hitter. And so, like you said, between his mercurial relationship with the media, I guess, and his He wasn't much of a defender, didn't play a premium defensive position, and the positions he did play, he didn't play them particularly well. But seems to me like if you can hit as well as Dick Allen can, you should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I talk a lot about candidates that are good at everything and don't have that one skill that stands out. Well, Dick Allen has that one skill, and it's among the very best of all time.
Yeah. All right. So Dick Allen, and he would be an interesting one too about what hat he would wear in the Hall of Fame. He split his career. He played most of it with the Phillies, and you know, I guess his best, not his best years. His best year was his first year with the White Sox when he won the MVP award. But you know, probably cumulatively, you think he goes in with the Phillies hat on?
I would assume so. Which it would be interesting to see what he had to say about that, because I know the Phillies were not particularly his favorite team to play for, but then he did return to them later in his career. So I have the feeling that some of those issues might have been patched over later.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder if he would be the first Hall of Famer who played for four teams in 4 years in the prime of his career.
I know, it's rather unbelievable.
From 69 to 72, Phillies, Cardinals, Dodgers, White Sox. So, all right, let's go to Ken Boyer, who his time with the Dodgers was very short, parts of two seasons and a total of 209 plate appearances, in which he was solid, but nothing special. Like you said, he's another guy who's been gone for a long time. He died in 1982. So he doesn't have that living player urgency. His brother was also a major league player, another former MVP. What's your case for Ken Boyer?
Yeah, he actually had two brothers that were former major leaguers. So Ken Boyer, I was surprised when you mentioned him because I had no idea he was on the Dodgers. But yeah, he finished his career with the Dodgers and they gave him his release so he could seek a minor league managerial career. My case for Boyer is, how the heck is he not in yet? Like, this is the type of candidate that the Veterans Committee usually gobbles up. Like, he had 287 average. He had the 2000 hits, 2143. 282 home runs. He had the MVP award. He was the World Series hero. I was surprised that he wasn't in yet.
Played for the Cardinals. That's usually a good point, right, for the Veterans Committee.
Yeah. So it's kind of surprising. Statistically, he is a very good candidate as well. He has 62.8 WAR, which remember, that's like the exact number that we had for Bill Dahlen if you kept out his offense that was above average. But yeah, 62.8, which is very good on the Jaws rankings for third baseman. It's very hard for third baseman to accumulate WAR and all these career totals. So the 2,100 hits and 282 home runs are actually quite good for a third baseman. Has the MVP award. I have him as my number three candidate on this ballot, right after Allen and Mignoso. I probably would throw a vote to Tony Oliva or Jim Cott before Boyer, just because they're still with us, but I find him to be a very compelling candidate.
Yeah. He's one that you wonder if he had had, you know, you think about a guy like Sandy Koufax, who retired at the prime of his career. And so obviously Sandy Koufax was an amazing pitcher, but only for a very short period of time. And it kind of allows all of us to think, man, what might have been if he had been able to pitch till he was 40, you know, and you just kind of, your brain inserts six or seven more peak Sandy Koufax years into his career numbers. Ken Boyer, you wonder what would have happened if he had had to retire after his MVP season in 1964 at age 33, because to that point, you know, he had a 121 OPS plus, really, really good numbers coming off an MVP season, had been an all-star, six straight seasons, got MVP votes in seven straight seasons. Just, he was an outstanding player. And then the rest of his career after that was, you know, kind of uninspiring, you know? And so it drags his career OPS plus down to 116, because for his last, whatever this is, five seasons. Yeah, five seasons. he had a 97 OPS plus. He was just, you know, just under league average at hitting, and you know, no power left at all after that. 40 home runs in 1800 plate appearances. And so he's one of those guys who almost might have benefited from that tragically short career.
In a way he might have, but then he would have had below 2000 hits, which the voters usually just won't even consider someone with fewer than 2000 hits. But hopefully that's going to change because of Dick Allen, but we'll see.
Coming up will be the final part of Jeff's conversation with Adam Drowski of Baseball Reference.
All right. Our last guy to talk about is one who you get a lot of mixed feelings, even among Dodger fans, you know, a guy who played most of his career with the Dodgers, and all of his, you know, all of his value, his best years, you know, well, I shouldn't say, you know, he was a better hitter with the Pirates, but he was, you know, the bulk of his career came with the Dodgers, and the records he set and the things he's famous for came with the Dodgers. That was Maury Wills. You know, at one point held the record for most stolen bases in a season. He led the league in stolen bases six straight seasons, had 586 career stolen bases, won an MVP award that my uncle, the Giants, felt upset about. He still, if you say the name Maury Wills around my uncle Jim, he will mutter under his breath that Willie Mays got robbed of the 1962 MVP award. And, you know, you can make a pretty strong case that Uncle Jim is right. And Maury Wills maybe shouldn't have even been in the top few there. But, you know, Maury Wills as a Hall of Fame candidate is really, he couldn't hit. I mean, he had 88 career OPS plus, which, you know, he was a shortstop. And so that's not terrible for a shortstop, especially in that era when shortstops weren't expected to hit. But his career WAR is 39.6. His offensive WAR is 38.4. Talk to me about Maury Wills as a Hall of Fame candidate.
Yeah, Maury Wills is still a living candidate too. You have noticed that when I've mentioned living candidates, I've basically said Oliva and Cott a bunch of times. I don't see Wills as on their level. And even the two of them, I wouldn't have them in my top four, but I'm considering them more now because they are living candidates. I say that as if I have a vote. I do not. He was really great on the base paths, and he wasn't much of a hitter, but he did have the 2,100 hits that we just said Ken Boyer had. Part of that was because he did not draw walks, which you usually like to see from your speedster. I think that when a lot of people look at Maury Wills and they see that he's this shortstop that was an MVP and stole all these bases, and they assume that maybe he was a great defender as well. But even though he had his two gold gloves, which actually I think he was good those years, but his WAR fielding runs come out to like literally zero. Like they have him as a perfectly average shortstop, which is valuable over 14 years, but it's not something that's really going to add up to a Hall of Fame case. So he doesn't have like the star defense going for him. He was a below average hitter. He could run like the wind, but I don't think that's quite enough for a Hall of Fame case. He was much better than Vince Coleman. And I don't know, I've heard one or two people say that maybe Vince Coleman deserves to be in consideration, but he absolutely does not. Like, we should be talking about Maury Wills. He is on that level where we should be discussing him. I just don't think he's quite there. If he got in, would I be upset? I would not, because we'd get a living candidate who was a very good player getting into the Hall of Fame. That would be wonderful.
So who are these people who said Vince Coleman should be in the Hall of Fame, and how did they handle being cut out of your life?
It's just, you know, every once in a while when you unfortunately read the comments on a Hall of Fame piece about players who should be in, or maybe like maybe it's about like a Maury Wills or even like an Omar Vizquel or something, like, oh, if Omar's a Hall of Famer, then Vince Coleman is, which maybe isn't a terrible argument if you put it that way. But yeah, I do try to cut it out of my life. But Maury Wills is much better. I will say that.
Yeah, Maury Wills also managed. Doesn't get the managerial bump that Gil Hodges gets because he was, oh, what's a nice way of saying a terrible, terrible, terrible manager? I guess that's as nice as I can put it. He managed parts of two seasons with the Mariners, had a 26-56 record. So he's definitely not getting a managerial bump. And yeah, you know, It's funny to me. Sometimes I'll have Dodger fans talking about Maury Wills like he's a no-brainer for the Hall of Fame. And I think it's like you said, you know, he had these gaudy stolen base numbers. He had the MVP. He had the gold gloves. He had, you know, a ton of all-star games, all that stuff. But when you look at his actual career, he was kind of one of those guys who you don't hate having on your team. You know, as a shortstop, he's a valuable guy to have on your team. I think you'd have to really be leaning on the word fame, you know, and the fact that he did at one point hold the record for most stolen bases in a season, you know. But like you said, so did Vince Coleman. Vince Coleman never held the record for most, right? Because Ricky Anderson had 130 right before Vince Coleman came along. So, but you know, that's something that you'd have to really be leaning on. Well, everybody just heard of Maury Wills. Everybody knows what he did, and kind of say, okay, he's in for the fame part more than for the baseball playing ability.
Right.
So
I have a player I want to throw back at you though.
Awesome.
A player who was not on the ballot.
Okay.
He was a star of a very unexpected star of the podcast that I ran. He came up on nearly every episode. And it's not a player I was very familiar with before going into this. And it's Jim Gilliam. And I'm very curious about the feelings about Jim Gilliam among Dodger fans, because I think he's got a better case than many people consider, because he was already in the Negro Major Leagues now, at age 17 for the Elite Giants. He hit well in his rookie year, and then by his third year, he was an all-star. He played in both East-West games. Then in 1949 and 1950, unfortunately, we don't have those numbers, because while he was still in the Negro Leagues and was an all-star both years, they were not given major league status. So then the Dodgers sign him, and they stash him in the minors, even though he's already been an all-star at a major league level. And in the minors, his first year, hits .287, scores 117 runs. Second year in the minors, he hits .301, drives in 112 runs. He scored another 111. And then by the time he finally makes it to the majors, it's his age 24 season, he leads the league in plate appearances, triples, and he hits .278 and wins Rookie of the Year. And this is the type of player who missed out, I think, on an early prime. And his final numbers, he's a 45 WAR player. So, you know, it's more than Maury Wills. Actually more even than Gil Hodges. And you could make a case that he's missing 2, 3, or 4 seasons worth of data there too. I think I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. Not quite ready to go there yet, but Jim Gilliam should be in this conversation that we're having, and he just wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would put Jim Gilliam in before I put Maury Wills in for sure. I don't know if you're aware of how the Dodgers, their policy on retired numbers, but their policy is that they only retire the numbers of Hall of Famers, and Jim Gilliam is the only exception. He's the only number retired by the Dodgers of a player or manager who's not in the Hall of Fame. And that was, you know, they retired his number shortly after he tragically died. He was a coach for the Dodgers, died, you know, as they were heading to the postseason in 1978. They ended up, you know, losing the World Series that year. And, you know, he had actually been up for consideration to be Dodgers manager when Tommy Lasorda was ultimately hired to replace Walter Alston. Jim Gilliam, between his contributions as a player and as a coach for the Dodgers, for my money, Jim Gilliam is a more deserving Hall of Famer than Maury Wills for sure. And, you know, it's like you said, it's you have to kind of insert some numbers mentally. Here's what we think, you know, if he had gotten to play in the National League a little bit sooner, you know, or if his numbers from 49 and 50 counted, all those things, you know, the raw numbers go up a little bit. Again, he's not going to get in on his offense. He had a 93 career OPS plus. He had a couple good offensive seasons, but for the most part, he was more solid than spectacular offensively, and kind of the same thing defensively. You know, a couple good seasons, and then some other seasons where he was kind of just, you know, average or somewhere around there. But you know, the cumulatively what he did as a player and as a coach and all of that, it does add up. You know, you can see it in the numbers, a 45 career WAR, and then you throw in coaching and, you know, impact, you know, the challenge, you know, coming up to the Dodgers in 1953, it was 6 years after Jackie Robinson, but he was basically Jackie Robinson's replacement at second base for the Dodgers. And so replacing a legend there, you know, all of that, Charlie Neal was in there somewhere too, but, yeah, you know, Jim Gilliam, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I don't know that I would vote for him. I would definitely vote for him before I vote for Maury Wills. And I think if Jim Gilliam got elected, I would think, well, that's a good pick. Whereas if Maury Wills got elected, I'd think, I'm not sure about that. So somewhere between Jim Gilliam and Maury Wills is that line for me.
Interesting. Yeah. I think that he's, because when you consider it, like, okay, he was in the minors 51 and 52. So people will say, well, if he wasn't called up to the majors, you know, then why should we consider that? Well, that's because the Dodgers are one of the only teams that were actually integrating the major leagues, and they already had quite a few black players. And there was this feeling like, oh, we can't have too many at once. And, you know, well, what's the other option? Do you trade him? Well, so many of the other teams hadn't even integrated yet. So no one's going to take a player like Jim Gilliam because they haven't integrated and they had no interest in doing so. So it was the same issue that Minnie Minoso had, which blocked his path to the majors. So I think researching Minoso really opened my eyes about Gilliam too, because I think he faced a lot of the same things.
Yeah. And not just, we already have a lot of black players on our team, but also one of them is Jackie Robinson, and he plays the same position as Gilliam, you know? Right. So even just from a practical standpoint of, I don't know where we'd put him, you know? And yeah, cause he hit really well for those Montreal Royals, I think it was in 51 and 52. And you know, by his performance in the minor leagues, he absolutely was deserving of a call up to the big leagues, and it just didn't quite come yet at that point. So, well, anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up, Adam?
No, I think that's it. Thanks so much.
Yeah. I really appreciate you doing this. Again, the podcast is called Building the Ballot. You can follow Adam on Twitter at Baseball Twit. You can, if you are a user of Baseball Reference, one of my favorite things Adam does is, I called you Adam Dunn accidentally, just, you know, I can see a little resemblance, I guess. I can't tell. Are you 9 feet tall?
I am not.
But one of the cool things Adam does is one of his responsibilities at Baseball Reference is user experience. And so Adam, if you follow him on Twitter, every once in a while, he'll put out a call, say, hey, DM me if you want to hop on a video chat and just go through this new feature I'm working on, or, you know, do some survey, you know, I want to ask you some questions about how you use Baseball Reference. And so it really is a cool way, if you are a big user of the site like I am, to actually be involved in helping to build out features. I actually was in the middle of a DM to you a couple of weeks ago, Adam, of a feature that I wanted. And then I just hopped into Baseball Reference so I could explain to you, okay, here's where I think it should go. And lo and behold, there it was. And I'm positive it wasn't there before. So maybe you built it in. It was, and maybe you can tell me, I'll tell you what it was. It was when you're looking at a player's perform, like a hitter versus pitcher kind of thing, where you, okay, show me how Chase Utley did against all pitchers. You know, I guess I should have used a current player, cause that's what I was looking for. It was when I was in the postseason, I wanted to see how the current Dodgers had done against a certain pitcher. And I thought, I wish there was an easy way to just say, okay, only show me the guys who are right now on the Dodgers. How did they do against Ian Anderson? You know, and turns out that feature is already there. So how long has that been there, Adam?
I think that one's been there for a while. That's the thing about StatHead. There's so much functionality there that one of my jobs, too, is making sure that people can find it all. Because I'll tell you, there's a lot there that people probably don't even know about. And that's one of the things that keeps me busy all day, is like, I have all of this information here that I need to connect Baseball Reference to the users, and how do we do it best? And so these interviews and things like that help me a great deal. So my DMs are always open if people have questions, I'll make a call for interviews. Right now we're doing a bunch of hiring, so all my interviews are interview candidates for jobs, but I'll be doing some more interviews for user interviews soon.
Awesome. So yeah, if you want to be involved in that, follow Adam on Twitter at Baseball Twit. And like you said, his DMs are open. So thank you again, Adam, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Have a good one.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow to talk a little bit about Cy Young voting. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about MVP voting, even though there's no Dodgers in the top three. There may be some Dodgers on the down ballot voting, so make sure to check that out. Thank you for making us Locked On Dodgers your first listen every morning. Make sure to check out Locked On Bets for your second listen every morning. Locked On Bets is your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. That's going to do it for us. Make sure to check out Locked On Dodgers. Subscribe on YouTube. Follow or subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Make sure to tell your friends and family. Make sure to do all that fun stuff, all that good stuff. Keep us going. Keep us strong in this off season as we continue to talk about the Dodgers every weekday morning, Monday through Friday. You can also follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. DMs are open on both of those accounts. You can also DM or follow Jeff on Twitter at Snydog. You can follow me at Vince Samperio. Get a hold of us on there as well. You can always send us an email, lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or send us a text or leave us a voicemail at 323-863-LOCK. Those are all the ways to get a hold of us. For any questions, comments, concerns, or just general praise, whatever you have on tap or whatever's on your mind, we are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us. When you get in your car, if you're at home, tell your smart device to play a podcast, Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.